Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, my name is Nora Jones, and I feel ecstatic about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Conan here, as if you didn't know that, hanging out here with Sonam Mosesyan and, of course, that scamp, Matt Gourley.
I'm sorry. But...
And you're just laughing because we did 3-2-1, and then usually I go right into it, but this time I took, I would say, 2 or 3 beats before I started speaking. That,
if you would have counted, it would have gone 3-2-1-9-8-7
Yeah,
six.
I took a little extra time to create a tension in the room, which then I could exploit because I'm a master of this medium.
Is there? There's no tension.
Oh, that's right. I forgot who I was dealing with. Yeah. You're 6 gummies into the wind right now.
I wish.
She puts them in her scrambled eggs in the morning. But you know, what's really funny is that we were laughing our asses off. Just goofing around, and Adam Sachs, who's in the, you know, who's our master and our guru, he's in the room, and he was like, enough, enough.
Yeah.
He said, all laughing has to be done on mic.
Yeah. No laughing off mic.
Yeah, no laughing off mic.
No fun when the mics aren't on or
and
something.
And so that's why I think I took a long pause, was to try and kill the joy that was in the room before we got started.
I see.
Yeah.
We were having a good time, too.
We were.
No. I know we were having a wonderful time, and Adam Sachs comes by, and you're free. Feel free to defend yourself, Adam.
And don't have any fun on mic.
Yeah. But what happened? You sensed.
Well, I'm not going to defend myself because I agree with the way you're characterizing what happened. Is you guys were laughing. We don't have a lot of time. We've got 35 minutes.
There's wait a minute. Why don't we have a lot of time?
There's another podcast coming.
Okay, let me tell you something. This is my podcast building. What do you mean I'm being shoved out of my own studio?
So we don't have a lot of time, and you guys were laughing, and I was looking at the clock, and I got nervous, and I said, laughing's okay, but only do it while the mics are
on,
please.
What would happen if you went out and told the guys, Conan O'Brien's in there? They're like, oh my God. And you know, they start quivering. It's going to be another 5 minutes. Is that the end of the world?
No, that would probably be fine.
Yeah. Oh, probably be fine.
I can't speak for them. I think it would be fine. 5 minutes. Yeah.
This building, we're painting my face on the side of it.
Yeah.
You know?
True. And also explaining this has now prolonged this intro because we still have to do bits and giggles.
No.
Bits and giggles. We have to do bits and giggles?
Is that what we call it?
Sure.
Bits and giggles?
Sure.
I didn't slave away for 40 years to craft a career in bits and giggles. We're here changing the way man thinks about man.
Oh, better late than never.
Is that what we're doing?
I know. I just said something and thought it would make sense.
I don't know what we're doing.
No, but I'll tell you this. Adam, I do appreciate the hard work.
Thanks.
And yes, we do need someone to crack the whip occasionally and let us know that our tomfoolery, our hijinks.
Bits and giggles.
Our bits and giggles maybe are wasting time. And we've got to make way for the next podcast.
What if this is part of our process?
Right.
Oh, really, Sona, talk about your process.
You have
a process?
To get in the zone?
No.
Huh? I don't know.
Soda uncaps a hollow molar and out drops a gummy edible.
I wish I was as high as you guys say I am, I'm not.
Well, you used to be.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And now with twins, of course.
I got to stay normal, babe.
Stay normal?
I got to stay normal.
Now, can I ask a question? This is, I know, personal, but if you're breastfeeding, you can't, right? Because
I didn't,
Yeah, because the gummy would... It would come out in the milk? Is that right?
The gummy, the full gummy would come out the nipple into the milk.
I just picture a gummy shooting out the nipple into Mikey or Charlie's mouth.
Uncomfortable.
That's what I picture. I picture Mikey or Charlie or one on each breast, and all of a sudden each one goes gloop, gloop.
I got the prize.
Yeah.
But they sleep really well that night, it's totally worth it.
Did you ever get up in the middle of the night and find them moshing?
Just in their cribs?
In their cribs, just grueling around and just moshing on top of each other?
No, I didn't. Right. No.
Glad you answered that honestly.
Yes. No, I have not seen them moshing.
The strangest thing that's ever come out of your breast.
Honestly, milk. What the fuck? What is that?
That's got to be a very strange thing.
It's weird. It's really, and I had to pump. And so you put like a cow, you put these things on your boobs and then it just like squeezes liquid out of your nipples.
Hey, I have a question.
Sure, I'll handle this.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. If I attach those to my nipples and they sucked really hard for a long time, would any milk come out? Is there any milk in there?
Oh, boy.
I just don't know about how humans work.
I think there have been some instances where men have lactated.
Right.
First of all, your dad is a doctor.
Yeah.
So if you asking this question is already very unsettling.
My dad said he was a doctor, but when we asked to see any kind of certificate, he got real squirrely.
Where was he going every day?
I think to the train station to eat a sandwich.
He was going to the doctor.
Yeah.
No, it's weird. It is weird. First of all, I don't think milk would come out of your nipples.
Oh, here we go. What does it play?
To start, male lactation has been observed in a few domesticated animals, including cats, goats, and guinea pigs on rare occasions. And also it says here, some transgender men and non-binary people nurse their babies and use the term chest feeding or body feeding rather than breastfeeding.
Okay, there we go.
All right.
Why do you guys want to lactate?
Well, first of all, let me tell you this. If science made it possible, for men to lactate, I think women would be very happy if they could get up for some of those midnight feedings.
You're right.
Or would you be jealous?
Would I be jealous that like Tack would be able to breastfeed instead of me?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. But okay. It's not like it's fun when you like squeeze your boob and like milk shoots out. It's weird.
I can't think of anything that'd be more fun. I'd be firing it at people.
I would too.
You know what I'd love to do is if I was at the beach and I didn't have my shirt on, just go like, oh man, and Gorley be like, what is it? And be like, oh, this part of my chest is real sore.
And then I
just push it and shoot you right in the, squirting flower that's part of your body.
I go to the carnival when you're supposed to shoot those water guns into the clown's mouth and see if you can raise the balloon up the wall.
Yeah. I would do that too.
This is why men don't lactate. You guys know this.
If men could lactate,
yeah,
the baby would get none of the milk.
Right.
Because we'd be going to carnivals and trying to shoot at ducks with our lactation milk. Right? And we'd be playing pranks on each other.
Yes.
Oh, my chest is sore. What is it, man? Squirt. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. I think it would be a huge disservice to babies if men lactated. I think it's important that women just.
I think that, we followed Adam Sachs's advice and we got back on track and talked about some really important stuff.
We got into some tits and giggles.
Okay.
What?
Sorry.
I got it.
You know what?
That's both
finally.
Pun. Yeah. It's also called back.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm checking the boxes.
Yeah.
You just made it finally to the very top of my list of worst people ever.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Hitler number two, Stalin number three.
Who's Hitler number two?
What's that?
Who's Hitler number two?
He's number two on the list now. Hitler number two. Well, anyway, our thanks to Adam Sachs for getting us to settle down, stop being silly so that we could get back to being silly. My guest today is a singer, songwriter, and pianist who has won 9 Grammy Awards. That's too many for her work. Her debut album, Come Away With Me, was a global phenomenon, selling over 27 million copies. Now she has a new podcast, Nora Jones is Playing Along, and she's joined by other musicians for conversations and musical collaborations. I am very excited she's here with us today. I really adore her. Nora Jones, welcome. You know, I've adored you for so many years, and you were kind enough to come on my late night show, or in shows plural, I'll say, over the years.
Oh, well, I was trying many to figure times. Out how many times.
You know what? We could probably look it up, but you came on. That's okay. As the minute I said
everybody
that,
everybody get going.
Nine people in the room started getting on their computers.
I got some medical results.
Yeah, you started crying. Don't worry, 6 months is a long time.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God.
Too long in this job.
Yeah, okay, take it easy. We're sitting here with Nora Jones.
Sorry,
I am not going to waste time bantering with you about your life expectancy. You came on many times and in so many different guises because you would perform yourself. You'd be performing your work. And then I remember we did a George Week once honor of George Harrison. And, you know, Paul Simon came. All these amazing people came by for the week. Danny Harrison was around. And it was this wonderful week. And you came. And I'm trying to think. I think you did I'd Have You Anytime.
I did Behind That Locked Door.
Oh, Behind That Locked Door. Okay.
It was so fun. That was one of our, actually, I remember my band and I, because we'd done a lot of TV shows together at that point. That was probably one of our best TV performances. You know, usually you do it and you're like, it would have been better if this. And we were like, yes, nailed it.
Yeah, the problem is you did that on camera. You turned to the camera
we
and
high-fived.
Said, yes, nailed it.
Mid-song, too. Yeah. It was weird.
And you said, top that, other musicians in the world.
Yeah, better than George's version.
Yeah, better than George. You know, when you started dancing and saying, better than Harrison.
Yeah, that's right.
That put a lot of people off. I was trying to remember what song it was this morning, and I could have just typed in, because we live in that world where I can type in, Nora Jones, George Harrison, Conan, or whatever, and it would come up immediately. But I can't work my own phone. I can't turn it on.
That's less fun anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you came on that week and you were always coming by and performing, and I just loved it every time you came on the show.
Thanks.
I'm a massive fan. And so
I'm a massive fan. I remember the first time I came on your show was for my first record.
2002.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I was so excited.
Oh, well, I remembered you, of course, that was the record, Come Away With Me, 5 Grammys. You know, I remembered at that time finding out about you, hearing about you. And saying, who is this Nora Jones? What is this all about? Oh, I'm very skeptical. What is this Come Away With Me album? I better check it out and see if it's up to snuff. And listening to it and thinking, I don't understand how someone your age at the time or anybody could come out with an album of all brand new standards. It was like, these are all going to be in standards books that everyone has to have forever. Uh-huh. And I was, like everyone else in the world, like 85 billion other people, completely floored.
Well, that's nice to say.
And I remember whoever was playing guitar with you, I think you did Don't Know Why, and he offered to show me how to play it guitar afterwards.
Really?
And so he came into, I don't know who it was, but he came into my dressing room and he's showing me how to play the guitar parts. And I was like, I think I got it. And then we got into a lot of stuff, you know, and edits and work, and we got to figure out tomorrow's show. And then I got home, completely forgot.
I think it's a hard song to play on guitar.
It's probably not in my wheelhouse.
It's not in my wheelhouse. It was either Jesse Harris who wrote the song or Adam Levy who toured with me at the time. But that's really fun.
I think it was the person who wrote the song.
Then it was Jesse Harris.
Yeah.
He was a good
Jesse,
friend of mine.
I need you to come back. I need another lesson.
He'll probably send you a video if you just give me your phone number.
No, I need him in person. Yeah. And he needs to fly out to LA at his own expense. Huh. That I do require. I was thinking about, I wanted to mention first that you have your own podcast, which I've really been enjoying.
Thanks.
And it's Nora Jones is playing along, and what's nice about it is that you get these people, it's two musicians talking and screwing around, and it's a very loose atmosphere. And I was listening to you with Jeff Tweedy, who's one of my favorite humans.
Yeah, mine too.
And it was such a great vibe. And I was thinking, man, I'd like to be on this podcast. And then I realized, oh, right, I'm not a musician.
Except you are.
Well, not really, but can you, does it ever expand out to non-musicians?
If they're playing music with me. I think my only, my way in is, you know, there's so many podcasts, of course.
Right. Yes.
And you guys were kind of a big inspiration because over the pandemic, I just, hearing you guys laugh really lit me up.
And oh, that's nice.
It just like, belly laughs were needed and it felt really good. And you screwing around with people on this podcast is kind of like what I want to do, except I'm a musician, so it's a little bit different.
No, but it's the same idea. There's such a, we talk about this a lot on the show, that, but I've been fascinated all my life with the fact that I have a natural, bent towards comedy, but I'm always, the grass is always greener. I'm always peering over into the music yard.
I see that,
and
yeah.
And thinking, man, so cool. That's the cool place to be. I'm over here with the laughing clowns. Well, sorry, not you guys.
Are we the, oh,
oh yeah. No, no, no. I never don't think of you
clown.
As comedians at all.
Oh, well, no,
I do.
Oh, thank you, Nora Jones.
Thank you.
Nora.
I mean, what do I know? I'm
thank
just a musician.
You.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, you don't have a professional eye like
yes.
I do. Nora,
no.
Couldn't possibly understand.
Take that, laughing clown.
But like hearing you with Kevin Nealon, just like messing around. I mean, that makes me so happy. And I feel like that's kind of what I'm trying to do with music, with people who I know, some who I don't know. And we find this common place and we're speaking like the same language.
Well,
you
this
know?
Is what always fascinates me because if there's something that you don't do, you put it on a pedestal or you don't have a natural inclination. So mm-hmm. When I see you sit down at a piano and play and sing, I think, well, she's superhuman. I am immortal. You know, I said amortal, not immortal. I just want to be really clear. There is such a close connection between comedy and music.
It's the same. I mean, you can do a perfect take of a song and it just doesn't feel right. Or you can do a really messed up, messy version of a song together and it just feels magical. And it hits the spot, you know?
I was thinking about your path, your journey. And I was thinking about how growing up, because I know your mom and dad divorce when you're pretty young.
They were never married.
Oh, they were never married.
But yeah.
So they were living in sin, as we Catholics say.
I mean, I honestly, I don't even know. Their story is so crazy. I don't even know what was going on. But
really, after all these years, you still don't know what was going on?
I've heard a lot of different versions. Oh. So I'll put it that way. But I think, they split up when I was really young. So I grew up with my mom.
Right. And this is an interesting thing in Grapevine, Texas.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting is that you have, anyone who doesn't know, your dad, Ravi Shankar, you come, and your mom as well, have this musical pedigree, this musical background. So there's some of that, but then you're transplanted to Texas.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be fascinating because you grew up in this environment that had to have influenced you. I mean, if you had grown up in New York City, do you know what I mean?
Or in India.
Or in India.
With my dad.
With your dad, you might not be you at this moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, my history is very different. I mean, it's interesting because I'm a musician. And he passed away, but he was this brilliant musician, mm-hmm. Indian musician. And my mom is not a musician, but she loved music. So I grew up with my mom seeing my dad here and there and then not seeing him for a long period. And then we reconnected later. But growing up, I was influenced by my mom's record collection.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So who were you listening to?
Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin and Willie Nelson.
So this is what's fascinating. So you grow up and you're listening to those people and you're in this, what I imagine is this, is it a small town in Texas?
Grapevine is a huge sprawling town now, but when I was little, it was small.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're growing up in this environment and you were not that connected to the pop music of your time. Is that right?
I was in middle school. I loved Casey Kasem's Top 40 every Sunday. Like, I was obsessed with that for a while.
I just listened to Casey. I would turn off the music. I just fell in love with the voice of Casey Kasem.
Who's going to be number one? Yeah.
You can buy bootlegs where it's just Casey and yeah. then you don't hear the music. I have all of them. They're awful.
There are Casey Kasem bootlegs. I don't know if you've heard
of
them.
No, I have.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Like, where he loses it.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, he
no.
has a meltdown.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
we should start releasing mine where I have a meltdown.
Oh, yeah, there's a
I
lot.
I want to
yeah.
hear those.
You can actually physically hear me hitting Gorley. But you were somewhat aware, but you were, I guess, jazz. Was jazz a bigger part of your life?
It was after a certain point. But I was really into Nirvana and the Violent Femmes at one point, you know. Mm. And then maybe like ninth grade, I got really into jazz.
Okay.
And then that's all there was for like the next 5 years. That's all I was obsessed with.
I'm so intimidated by jazz.
So a lot of people are. Even I am, because I'm not really a great jazz musician. It's kind of where I came from musically. Mm-hmm. But I never practiced enough to really hang with, you know, real jazz musicians and
jam session. Yeah.
Jazz, that's exactly what they call themselves.
Yeah, I've always thought of jazz music as, you know, you're sitting at the sushi bar and they're like, it's chef's choice. And you don't know exactly. It scares me a little bit. Yeah. And that's just because I have some mental block. I was all about rockabilly.
Yeah.
Crazy, intense rockabilly. And that was the stuff that pulled me in and kind of lit me up. You know, I inspired me in so many ways.
It's great music.
But very, very simple.
Yeah.
Extremely rudimentary. And that was maybe part of the magic for me I could play it.
I know? Feel you. I mean, that's why I love country songs. And sometimes you just cut straight to the heart of something with the most simple thing. I think I can't play fast jazz either. So we're in it together. in that term.
There are so many ways in which we're similar.
Yeah. And that's
people are always calling me the Nora Jones of comedy.
We can't play fast jazz.
You know,
I think they call you the Jim Jones of comedy.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Because I'm leading my followers to your destruction. Yeah. Well, either way. I'm fine either way. And either way, it's a compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
If you're being honest, no one really knows what you do for work, especially if you're in B2B. That's a business doing business with other businesses.
Oh, I didn't know you knew what that was.
I know exactly what that is. B2B, I use that all the time. Businesses doing businesses with other businesses. Fortunately, LinkedIn has a network of professionals who get what you do, and you can reach the right people who matter most to your company. LinkedIn has over 1 billion members on its platform, including 70 million decision makers.
That's good.
Since LinkedIn members are regularly updating their work history, you can precisely build a target audience by job title, industry, company, and more. Start reaching the right people for your, get ready, B2B business with LinkedIn ads. Gets even better because LinkedIn will give you a $100 credit on your next campaign.
That's crazy.
Yeah, just go to linkedin.com/Team Coco to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/Team Coco. Terms and conditions apply. I get to say this again. Listen, LinkedIn, the place to be, right?
That's cool.
Business to business.
That's really cool.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
But you know what's amazing is that you grow up listening to these people, and then if you could ever imagine that, okay, you're a huge Willie Nelson fan, Ray Charles fan, you're going to be playing with these people. You did a duet with Ray Charles.
Yeah, Yeah, I did. I mean,
what was
crazy.
That like? What was Ray Charles like?
He was very nice. We, you know, we went in for 20 minutes. We did three takes of the song, wow. and that was it. But we were all live in the room together. It was amazing. He was sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. And then I know that you have this longer lasting connection with Willie Nelson.
I've been so lucky to play and sing with Willie like multiple times. I love him so much.
Yeah. He is such a great spirit.
Yeah. Did you see they're having a big show at the Hollywood Bowl for his 90th birthday?
90th birthday.
Wow. In April.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
He is a great advertisement that marijuana is not bad for you.
Exactly.
he and Snoop Dogg will live to be 600. Yeah. You know, what's amazing to me is I'm thinking about the first time I met Willie Nelson. He came on my late night show in the early days, and he had that incredible beat up guitar he has.
Oh, Trigger.
Trigger.
Yeah.
That he's played forever. Is it a Martin?
It's a nylon string. That's all I remember about
it. Yeah,
he puts it through an amp.
Yeah, he puts it through an amp.
Which is cool.
Right. He's got a little drop in, pickup.
Yeah.
And he plays it through an amp, and it's got a hole in it as if it had been recovered somewhere and a rat had eaten through it.
Not the sound hole. It's got a separate.
No, it's got a gaping.
It's got its own. There's the sound hole, and then there's this thing that looks like a ferret clawed its way into the guitar or clawed its way out. And it's covered in signatures.
Yeah.
And it's all these people. He's had Trigger forever, and it's everyone has signed. He's had all these amazing people sign Trigger, and the show's over. And I said, that's just incredible. He's got like George Jones' signature. He's got all these. He's got everybody. And there's Tammy Wynette, and there's but all these public. And he said, yeah, sign it, Conan. And I said, no, we shall not sully this. And he's like, come on. And I signed it with like a ballpoint pen.
Wow.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that when Willie got backstage, he wiped it off.
That's cool. Yeah. I don't think I've signed Trigger.
That was a dry erase marker.
Yeah, exactly. I said, I'll use my pen. He went, no, use this one. Wipes off easily.
That's lucky. You got to touch Trigger.
I got to touch Trigger. Yeah. It is funny when you get to hold an iconic instrument.
Yeah, it is.
If you've had that experience, I'm sure you have, where it's a famous guitar that you get to hold on to.
I don't know if I actually have, but my friends, we did a song with Willie, and before he got to the studio, his tech asked a friend of mine to tune it or to hold it and play it while they did the sound, and my friend was pretty excited to play Trigger.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
That would be pretty freaky. I think I've seen just over the years, well, through Danny Harrison, I was in England and went by his house, which was his dad's house, obviously. And he showed me, and he's acting like it. Oh, you know, do you want to hold the 1963 Gretsch duo jet that my dad played in the Cavern?
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking I shouldn't touch it. It's like I will defile it. And then you realize it's a guitar.
Yeah.
And
it needs to be played. It wants to be played.
Well, actually, the guitar did see me and say, no, not him.
First time
I'm Robin Knox.
That's so funny. Actually, you're reminding me, I have played a very famous piano. And I got to go to Friar Park and met George Harrison, and Danny was there, and Olivia. When I first reconnected with my dad, actually, I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. We finally reconnected, and we got very close over the years after that. Mm-hmm. So it was a great thing. And I remember I landed in London to go visit them for the first time in a long time. And they're like, we're going to George's house for dinner. So just take a nap, clean up. I was like, okay, whatever. I didn't know we were going to George Harrison's house.
Oh my God.
Who is this George anyway?
I was kind of oblivious. You know, I was jet lagged and young. And we get there, and he was so sweet.
Yeah.
And he was so happy to see me and my dad reconnect as well. And
he idolized your dad.
He did.
Clearly, your dad changed his life.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a crazy night, and I was half jet lagged through the whole thing. But he asked me to play for him because my dad told him that I was this piano player, and I was like, okay, because I just was like, you know, I knew who he was at that point. Of course,
you played for George Harrison.
So I sat down at this piano which now I know, I didn't at the time, but I think it was one of John Lennon's pianos.
Yes. And so, I've seen it because it when I was there, I think they moved it to, this was in a different, it's not in the house when I saw it. It's, there's this other place where they shot all the interviews for the anthology and it's got this hand painting on it.
Yes, it's got painting on
like
it.
Like a rainbow and sort of psychedelic stuff.
Yeah, yes. So I didn't know this at the time. And I was kind of just oblivious to the whole meaning of the moment. But I sat down and I played an old Hoagie Carmichael song called The Nearness of You for George. And he was so sweet. And it was just a very funny moment that I just now remembered.
And I'm sure he loved it.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind about it. I don't know. If he hated it, he pretended he loved it.
You are Nora Jones, you know.
I know, but I was 18.
I know, but if I had come in at 18 and played a song on the piano for George Harrison, it would have gone very differently.
Yeah. Well, I sang it too.
Clang, 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 clang.
Luckily, I didn't know the instrument was so historic.
Yeah. It's good not to know those things.
I think
sometimes.
So. It's better to just be oblivious.
Yeah.
I'm kind of intrigued that when you first started out, before you had all your success, you were a lounge singer, you know?
Yeah,
and
kinda.
And for just a little bit, you were a lounge singer. And I'm thinking, you know, let's say things hadn't blown up for you. Do you think you could have like made your peace with being a lounge singer for a long time, or is that a tough gig?
I mean, it's something you don't really know, mm-hmm. right? You can't go back. I kind of was a lounge singer, but it was really more like a restaurant than a lounge.
So you're playing for people while they're eating.
Yeah. And usually they wouldn't clap and nobody heard, but the gig was actually to just play piano. But mm-hmm. since I sang, I asked if I could bring a little amp and sing like every five songs or something. And it was actually the best practice I ever had. This is in college in Dallas. And I basically learned how to sing and play at the same time because it's kind of a coordination thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So it was great practice. And every once in a while, the whole restaurant, like, one person would just start clapping and then slowly the whole restaurant would start clapping. But then usually they weren't clapping at all.
I will tell you that, first of all, the thing I hate the most in comedy is when you have to perform for people who are eating.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And it doesn't matter what stage you get to, there are benefits.
Yeah.
Where they say, okay, go on up and you have your jokes and you have your riffs that you want to do and you get up on stage and you hear the distinct sound of silverware hitting each, you know, clanking.
Which is a
together.
Horrible sound.
And then and people chewing. And I remember being at there's a big ballroom at the Waldorf Astoria and I had to do benefits there a million times when I was in New York and being up there and the crowd doesn't even know. Just a voice of God goes, ladies and gentlemen, Conan O'Brien. And people are just getting their like plates are being put down and served and people are saying, no, I said red, not white.
Yeah.
And I walked up stage and there wasn't even any sense that I was on stage.
Yeah.
And I go, well, anyway, and I start to get into my thing and a man was sitting right in the front row.
Oh, just sawing.
And his back was to me. And he was cutting into his meat and he put it in his mouth and he's chewing. And then he whipped his head around to look at who's this annoying person at the podium behind me. And I just saw a chewing, unhappy face looking up at me.
That's not great.
And I thought, fuck this. This is, I don't want to perform for people eating.
You can have like a no eating clause.
Oh.
Did you know that? Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you need more pull in the industry.
You can say like, I'll do it, but not when they're eating.
When they're eating.
Directly before dinner or after the plates have been cleared.
But I will tell you this, Nora, I am a person who, if I'm anywhere, if I'm in a bar or a restaurant and someone's playing, when they finish the song, I applaud.
Yeah.
I don't care. And sometimes it's awkward because I get self-conscious because if I start applauding and no one else does, I think I'm making the situation worse.
Especially if no one else does.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird. And also you're drawing attention to yourself.
Well, I love that part.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you liked that or what.
Oh, no. I go out. In a t-shirt that says, I am Conan O'Brien. Yeah. And then parentheses, it explains who that is.
You start clapping in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
People look people at you.
And I say, Conan Likey. many times when you've been on the show, I'd clap midway. Conan's happy. Let's get a camera on me.
I just want to get a cockaroo while we're here.
A cockaroo!
Yes. Thank you.
Oh my God.
I can die now.
I just want to get a cockeroo. Yeah. Out of here.
That's what she said.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've been getting that all my life. You know, I'm thinking about all the different people you've collaborated with, because you mentioned Ray Charles, but what it's amazing to me is that you have, I think, a very enviable career. You've had massive commercial success, and you're respected, and you're a nice, grounded person, and you can...
So, like, that you know of.
I usually find out. Word gets... I'll tell you what, word gets out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
I talk to Uber drivers, and they tell me. but, like, you've collaborated with Keith Richards.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Again, just, like, a nice human, you know? A musician.
Yeah.
That's yeah. Great. Sometimes you do these collaborations and the song's already been recorded and the person's not even there.
Oh.
And you go in and you add your vocals. And I've done a couple of those with Keith, but I've actually been in a room playing music with him a few times and it's incredible.
I would, yeah, that would be sort of otherworldly.
Yeah.
You know, I just, in the few times that I've had little contacts with him.
Oh, yeah.
Very, you know, like he didn't know who I was or anything. But
I'm sure that's not true.
No, no, this was years ago. Before I
You weren't wearing your little t-shirt?
I had it on even when I was, before okay. I had a TV show, I had it on. Right. But yeah, I'm always fascinated when that, it feels to me like it would be a great exercise to, one might not immediately link Norah Jones and Keith Richards, but you can get together and musically you guys can
yeah.
find the groove or what it is.
I mean, we both love Hank Williams, right? So yeah. It's not a problem. It's a language. And it's like, that's what's so fun about this podcast is it's like a never ending list of people to just play with and play music with. But it's like really just like playing in a playground. You know, it's like that. It's so fun.
And do you have like your bucket list of these are the people I've got to have on your podcast that you want to mess around with?
It's just never ending. It's a bazillion people. It's like, of course, you know, my idols or a young musician who I admire or someone that nobody knows about that I just like or, you know, whoever.
So, I mean, that's so fantastic. That's,
yeah.
And I think that's what this medium, this podcast thing, what I mean, every time we come into the studio, I'm delighted that this form exists.
Me too. It's like intimate and fun. And it's, I'm never, you know, going to get invited to dinner with you probably. So it's fun to just have this time together to talk. And
I know you've asked a lot and
I know.
I'm still not ready.
I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just need to hear a little more of your stuff.
But you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of people you might not cross paths with in an intimate way.
Well, that's a way
to really connect.
Yeah. That's what I was on my way to work today and I called the guy who's a good friend and he booked music on our show all through the 90s, 2000s, Jim Pitt.
Oh yeah. I remember him.
Yeah. And you know, great person who, helped really put the musical stamp on my show, which was so important to us. And, I called him up and I just was as excited and I said, hey, I just want you to know I'm going to be talking to, Norah in like half an hour. And he was like, oh my God. And we were chatting about how nice it is. And I said to him, all these years, Norah's been coming on my show and performing. And of course we chat, but I never got to sit down with you and talk to you.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize show business is, you know, you do your sound check, your rehearsal. I come down, I say hi, then I've got to go and do my stuff. Then you perform, I thank you. And then you move on, I move on.
Yeah, it's brief.
Yeah, and this is what I love.
Yeah, you know? It's so much, it's so like warm. And it gives me the warm fuzzies, you know?
Because I didn't know that country music was so important to you.
Yeah, and well, I grew up in Texas.
Yeah, so exactly.
It was in the water.
Yeah.
You know, and my mom's from Oklahoma, so it's a familial thing on that side of my family.
Do you have a favorite Hank Williams song?
I mean, So Lonesome I Could Cry
is just
about one of the best songs ever sung.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that sad.
I love that Ken Burns documentary on country music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's taking you through everybody, and then he gets to the, there's the chapter episode about Hank Williams, and it's entitled Shakespeare of the South.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I love that music.
But also you get to, like, work with Outkast, Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
So
it's run the gamut. I've been super lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Has anyone ever asked you, like, can I do a duet with you? And it was someone you did not want to do that with?
You mean, do I say yes to everything?
I just meant in person. Yeah. You know, I meant like the awkwardness in person. Yeah. Of, like, you're talking to someone who.
Like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Well, actually.
I'm ready to do a duet with you.
I don't think.
I've got my ukulele.
It's never happened like that ever. But. Yeah, I mean, I've turned a few down, I guess. I've got my ukulele.
I have my bassoon. Come on. We can do it right now.
I would do that probably. It was just like really easy. But I don't know. I've turned a few things down. I've turned a few things down where I really liked the person and I just didn't have time. You know, stuff just happens. But doing this podcast, it's like I have to actually ask people now. And that's kind of nerve-wracking for
ask
me.
Ask them.
To ask people to come be on my show now.
Right.
And being in that position of asking and maybe getting rejected, that's been like the most kind of like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, you know?
You know, it's funny. I'll just because I've been doing this for so long, I used to take it personally.
Yeah.
If someone couldn't come on the show or said no to the show, I took it as them saying, Conan O'Brien, thank you, no.
Yeah. What and, a jerk that guy is.
Yeah. And then later on, it took me years because my publicist used to say, no, don't take it personally. They're in town.
Yeah.
And then I realized, because I'd been on the other side of it, where I'm someplace and they'll say like, hey, there are these five people that, or these five shows that are saying, can you come do something? And you think I'm only here for a day. I can do one, or I don't really want to do that this time, or I can't do it for some. And you realize that it's not personal at all. I mean, sometimes it is.
Sometimes
I've had celebrities say I despise that guy. And I don't realize why that has to get back to me.
Some them personally.
Yeah. George Clooney calls and says, no.
No, thanks.
You are not my cup of tea. You're way too silly. If only that were a joke. Come on.
Not Clooney.
I'm just, no. He loves me. We'll connect eventually. But no, let's not put that out there. Or okay. Do we?
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yes.
What's that?
I want George Clooney.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I do
Can
too.
You be better? Can you change yourself?
Go get him, Tiger.
I'll try. I'm going to try and up my game just enough to
thank
get Clooney.
You.
Get
thank
all
you.
Of Ocean's 11 in here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. All at once?
Yeah. At the same time.
Oh,
yeah.
Please.
I think I could get two of them.
Carl
on.
Reiner.
Oh, wait. No. Carl Reiner passed. Yeah. Can't get him anymore. I could have. Oh. I could have, but we'd need some voodoo magic to get him now. Nice one, Gourley, by the way.
Yeah, I picked the one guy who's not alive.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about waiter number three.
Oh, okay. Oh, he's good, though.
Yeah. What is your...
I'm sorry. The way you just went right back into questions.
That's what I have to do.
I know.
I'm a pro. Nora gets it because she's a pro.
I'm sorry.
Right? You run a podcast. You know how to just snap back.
I love when you get Sona going. It's my favorite thing.
Oh, when I get her angry?
Yeah, no, when you get her laughing. Like
oh,
that.
When I get her laughing.
Oh, yeah.
When she gets going.
Yeah. It's my favorite thing too, actually.
Well, it must good. Feel so good to laugh like that.
It does.
It's rare to laugh like that.
I mean, for some people. I'm a hearty laugher.
Yeah, you are.
In general, and then also just working for someone for Conan O'Brien has been
of course
the best.
Well, I think the thing that comes that is real is how much bullshit happens between Sona and I and laughing that isn't recorded.
Yeah,
because I will call you and say there's something really important I need you to do for me, and then it's something that's completely made up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
he'll go on riffs on the phone with me just because I'm laughing. And I think it's a drug
it
for him.
It must feel so good to have her around.
It is.
He's such a great laugher.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nora.
Yeah, Gourley less so.
No. Thank you.
Gourley isn't really a laugher.
Gourley is funny as hell.
I know.
He cracks me up. I know.
I remember when I first started listening to your podcast, he was just kind of quieter.
Yeah. Well, he's a quiet, and then he started.
He's really come out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And now, guess what? Now we're trying to get him back
in. Too late.
I'm the cat's out of the bag.
No. Genie's out of the bottle, baby.
Yeah, it's and out.
It's a Jack in the Box that I'm trying to jam back into the box.
Can't do it.
No, it's good. He compliments you really well.
No. I got very lucky because this all came together. I mean, Sona, I knew, was going to be part of it. And then they brought this Gorley guy in. Yeah. And I said, absolutely not. And they said, no one else will do it. And then
That's true. And even I did money. Because I was being blackmailed.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
But I'm curious if... Because I am baffled by songwriting. I don't understand
Me
it.
Too.
And I don't understand composition. and I guess, you know, even people that do it, but, you know, I play a lot of guitar and don't really know what I'm doing. But the idea, and I've talked with Amy Mann about this extensively.
I loved that
And
episode.
We're supposed to write a song together.
Yeah, did it ever happen?
Well, it's my fault because she said, I'm ready to go when you are. And I'm terrified because she mentioned, yeah, you need to sort of make yourself emotionally available.
Oh.
And like, what is it you want to say in your song? And I'm thinking, emotionally available?
What's that?
I can't do that.
Everybody's different, though.
Yeah.
I think everybody has their own process.
Right.
And that Jeff Tweedy actually has this really great book called How to Write One Song. It's like this little inspiration guidebook.
Oh, I have to get that.
It's great. You would love it. It's great.
How to Write One Song?
Yeah. And he talks about how he doesn't believe in writer's block, but actually he just thinks it's you self-editing yourself.
Yes.
I love that because I agree with it. If you just let it go and you're not worried about it until later, then you can clean it up or not play it for anybody.
It's funny. When creating stuff in comedy or all the years that I was a writer, one of my biggest problems was there's a little gremlin on my shoulder that is so, nope, not good enough.
Well, exactly.
Not good enough.
You know all about it.
Yeah. And when I can get that guy drunk or anesthetize him or excise him in some way and just go.
Yeah.
And that was a major revelation for me in my career was I thought writing comedy meant sitting down and getting to work, which, yes, it does mean that. But then there were so many times where I was just screwing around, making people laugh. And they would say, oh, well, that's great. Write that down. That's a sketch.
Yeah.
And I'd say, what? I was just having fun.
It's the inspiration.
Yeah. And it's just if you can remove this serious, it's time now for I, Nora Jones, to get to, if you got to get rid of that.
I can't do that. That doesn't work for me at all. I have to just record ideas as they're in my head in the shower or driving in a car or whatever. Just get it down real quick on
So instead of soap on a rope, you have a tape recorder on a rope in your shower.
Yeah. No, but seriously, like you just get it down and then later you can work on it. But the inspiration part has already happened.
Does anything ever come to you in a dream? Because famously you hear about Paul McCartney waking up and... in saying, oh, I don't know what this is. I think I must have heard it somewhere and it was yesterday. Again, and that's Paul McCartney, but do things like that come to you in a dream ever?
I've written some brilliant songs in dreams that are basically like the Tenacious D song tribute where you can't remember it, you know?
right.
and it's basically that, you know, it's amazing, but then you wake up and you can't remember it. But I have written songs, doing like meditations before and I'll think of an idea and I'll stop really quick and record it and then finish meditating or when you're falling asleep and you're in that in between spot, stuff comes there. And I've written a couple little ideas from that I really like.
Anytime I have, awoke in the middle of the night and scribbled something down in the morning, it's just total gibberish.
Yeah, really.
It's like caramel gravy fight.
Not bad.
And I look at it and I go, what?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love those dream journals. Yeah, people write like the first thing that comes to mind and it's bananas.
Yeah.
And you're living, you're East Coast exclusively pretty much?
New York.
Is that just, it's so funny because I was so East Coast for so many years and then came
I know.
This way.
I remember.
And that's right. You greeted me as I landed.
I was there.
You were at the American Airlines gate.
Actually, I saw you once at an airport in New York, probably, I don't know how old your oldest child is, but you had a newborn in your arms.
Yeah.
And it was like after a red eye from LA.
Yeah.
And we had done your show a couple of times and I was like, look, there's Conan O'Brien. Mm-hmm. You're holding a newborn.
Yeah. It wasn't my baby.
Yeah. It was definitely your baby.
No, they were just giving them out on the flight.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, like it was mints. First class. You get a baby if you want.
Now, I didn't want to say hi. But
you didn't?
I didn't say hi because it was like a red eye. It was 6 a.m. and you had a newborn in your lap.
Delighted. Yeah.
And now I feel like I would say hi to you if I saw you at 6 a.m. You were holding a newborn.
I love randomly bumping into people that I adore. I remember so clearly coming off, I think, a red eye and going into JFK. And there's this one specific part of the airport I'm walking through and I bump right into, literally almost ran into Paul Rudd.
Oh, amazing.
I remembered he was holding a guitar case because he was working on his guitar playing. And we bumped into each other and we had this really great conversation. And now every time I pass that part of the JFK terminal when I'm walking through, which I am all the time, I think of like this romantic moment with Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And
amazing.
He's told me that he thinks of it too.
That's sweet. You should recreate it.
Yeah.
I think we should just marry.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Me too.
I love Paul Rudd.
To meet you. Yeah.
No one, you know what? Nobody dislikes Paul Rudd.
No, that's true.
And I've been searching because I'm determined to find somebody.
It's totally true. Yeah. Yeah, there's some people. He's just Paul Rudd and Dolly Parton. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, nobody dislikes.
Have you worked with Dolly?
I have before. Yeah, I got to sing with her.
That song you have, Creepin' In with Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I did Creepin' In. Yeah. And she came and sang with us at the Ryman and I got to sing one of her songs with her once.
Okay, that's just craziness.
But this is forever ago. And I mean, she's the best.
It doesn't matter if it's forever ago. It happened.
She's the best.
She is the best.
She's the best. And the funniest. You should have Dolly on.
Yes. No, Dolly? I'm not ready. She's not ready yet.
She's ready.
She needs to prove herself a little more in the world of music.
No.
Yes.
Dolly. Oh my God.
You know what I love is when people say you should have her on
as if you haven't thought of that.
As if I'm forbidding it.
Yeah.
It will happen, Adam. It's going to happen.
Please.
But one of my favorite things, this reminds me of when you host a show, people are always suggesting guests.
Yeah.
In the early days of my late night show, there was a guy who, and I can't remember what, I think he was from Central America and his job was to sort of be the guard that stood on the way into the elevators at 30 Rock to get into our part of the building where the offices were. And I remembered this guy was very nice. He was very young. And I think his name was like Luis, I think. And I'd come in and he'd be like, oh, hello, Conan. Good to see you. And I'd say, oh, hi, Luis. Have a good day. And I remember I came by once and he said, hey, Conan. And I said, yes. And he said, the Rolling Stones are in town. And I said, oh, I know, Luis. It's been in all the papers. And he said, I think they'd be pretty good on your show. And I said, yes, Luis, they would be amazing on the show, but the Rolling Stones are the biggest musical act in the world, and they don't do shows like mine. And also, if they were going to do a show, they'd probably do like a big 11:30 show like Letterman, and I'm a 12:30 show, and we've only been on a few years, so they wouldn't probably come on my show. And he looked at me, and he shrugged, and he went, I think they'd be good.
So sweet.
Like I was blowing him off.
As if you
you're missing an opportunity.
You're right. Can you help me facilitate that?
Yeah. Exactly. Like Mick Jagger was on the phone like, come on. Yeah. No.
That's funny.
But
somebody told me I should have Billie Eilish on my podcast and I was like, that would be amazing. I don't know if she would want to do my podcast.
I think she would. I think anybody would.
That's the nice thing is you are in that sweet spot of, I just think a new act, an act that's been around for 100 years, anyone's going to want to do your podcast.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Not anyone, but I'm.
Let me talk to them.
You talk. You be my liaison. Please.
Conan O'Brien. Yeah, listen to me, Eilish.
Give me Billie Eilish.
You're going to do Nora Jones, see? Who am I? Conan O'Brien from television. Well, not anymore television, but used to be television. Eilish, are you there? Are you there? Eilish!
Yes.
Maybe I shouldn't do that
Please
for
do
you.
Please do that for me.
Yeah.
So I was, where was I? I was having dinner with, I think I was, who was I having dinner with? I think it was Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally. Mm. And someone looked over and in a far corner booth was Dolly.
Oh, wow.
And I know Dolly because I think she did the late night show once or twice. They were both like, can you bring us over and introduce us to Dolly Parton? And it was just so, it was like going to say hello to the Pope.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to say higher than the Pope.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry.
Aren't you Catholic?
Yeah, you are very, your family especially, very Catholic.
Yeah, but there's a lot of Popes. They keep replacing them.
You're right.
There's only one Dolly Parton.
Yeah,
there's been like 175 Popes.
Right.
And they had two Popes at the same time. Right. So
They did.
I'm sorry. The Pope, like the Euro, has been devalued. There's just too many of them are being minted. But there's only one Dolly Parton.
Yeah. It's true.
And
it's
very true. Man, is she...
She's the best.
She is the nicest person. We were all like quaking in our boots and she couldn't have been a more beautiful soul.
She's very giving with herself, like her personality and everything, you know?
Also, she's always of the time.
Yeah.
In this crazy way, which is so if you, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, like... Right now, wisdom from her is as precious as it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And her doing a musical performance. It's just kind of neat how she sort of transcends time. I don't know how she does
that. She's great. Well, she just got inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And she thought it was kind of funny because she says she's not a rock and roll musician. But she did it anyway, and she was very gracious about it. And now she's made a rock and roll album.
Oh, really?
I think as a sort of a, like, you know, I might as well. And I think that's pretty awesome.
I almost feel like 9 to 5 is kind of a rock and roll song.
Yeah, I mean, genre, I mean, I...
So much.
She definitely deserved it. But.
Yeah, yeah.
A rock and roll song that has typewriter for percussion.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
We just had, it'll have already been out, I think, by the time, but Jane Fonda sat in that chair.
Oh, my God.
A couple of days ago.
Amazing.
And we got on the topic of Dolly Parton, and she spoke of her as if she was the, you know, I mean, she idolizes Dolly Parton and told these really great stories about her.
I bet.
So
it's Dolly Week at Conan.
I know.
Sachs. You know what? We've all wanted Dolly, but Adam Sachs is forbidden it for now.
Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there's one track she cut in 1973 that Adam Sachs didn't quite like.
Now that Norah Jones has blessed it, I'll
Thank you.
Go to Dolly.
I know.
Go to her. Go to the light.
If we do book her and you have to travel, will you let me and Gorley go? I mean, sometimes you don't let us come.
Well, I have to come as the caveat.
Oh, you can come.
Yeah.
Oh.
Look, let me explain.
Oh,
if
man.
I'm going to talk to like a, you know, Barack Obama or someone, there are security issues involved, background checks. And that's why you two are usually excluded.
Right.
You know what you did, and you know what you did four times.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
But.
You're a shoplifter.
Okay. But
are
what
you?
About, what about. Yes, are I you? Am. I am. I was. I'm not anymore.
Right, that's
and I've
you.
Never been caught, so it wouldn't be on a record. So there
you
go.
You've only talked about
it
many
about
times
it.
On
I
the
know.
Air. And
you bring it up. You ruin it. But
yeah,
I'm
that's
saying,
a great criminal. I wouldn't have even confessed, but you brought it up.
But Dolly Parton doesn't have a Secret Service. So Gorley and I
yeah,
mean, we're
we
putting you on the
to
spot. You're go. Taking us with us. You're taking us with you.
And
so
if
thank you very
don't,
much.
We're striking.
Okay.
Oh. Right. Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, good you did, Nora.
Opposed. We're not.
Fun.
You know what happened? Gorley's been getting a little more feisty. We all know that.
Yeah.
And Sona, of course, always just a terror. But you come in and you praise them both. And now they're insane. Yeah. They're like, we're going to
three
strike.
Of us are striking.
Yeah, it's fun.
Uh-huh.
It's fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, so what do you have planned for this coming year? I know that, are you recording right now?
Yeah, I'm actually making an album and a lot of the songs came from those in between sleep times.
Okay.
Oddly enough. And I'm going to go on tour in Europe this summer, which is always a joy to play music live
and
really just doing this podcast and trying to hang out with people and in front of microphones.
The podcast is Nora Jones is playing along, and it's terrific. Mavis Staples,
yeah,
was on the podcast.
She was at Mark Rebier. Do you know
him?
Oh my God, he's incredible.
I'm not as familiar with him now.
Yeah, we had Bobby Hall, aka the rapper Logic.
Yeah,
which was a really fun like meeting of two different worlds.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah, it kind of runs the gamut. There's no limitations. It just has to be playing music together. There's no genre or anything.
Also, I'll tell you this, as a fan of your podcast, you have an amazing, obviously you have an amazing singing voice, but I love your speaking voice.
Really?
Yeah, it sounds, very, it just sounds really lovely.
That was the thing I was most nervous about. Was
really?
Well, you know, when you hear yourself speaking recorded is the most annoying thing on the planet to most people, and I'm no different. So when I hear myself sing, I can get with that. I'm used to that. But when I hear myself talk, sometimes I'm just like, ugh.
I think that's healthy.
I think it's normal, too.
I think if you're someone who, when you hear yourself, says, yeah, more of this.
More of this.
More of this. Something's wrong. I am horrified when I hear myself speaking. But then I just say, yeah, that's just self-hate, and it's probably done you some good.
It's done good. And also, one thing I did notice listening back and approving stuff is I have a weird cackle, because when Sarah and I get to laughing sometimes, my co-host, or whenever me and one of the guests laugh, after the song is done, there's always like this crazy laughter because we're trying a song for the first time and then we just bust out laughing when it's done. But I have my laugh surprised the hell out of me. I didn't know I had a cackle.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Occasionally you discover things about yourself.
Yeah.
So have you enjoyed listening to yourself?
I don't really listen to the podcast.
Well, you've got these twins. You're busy now.
Well, also, if I didn't, I mean, I didn't always have the twins even before. I didn't, like, it's not
you have to go overboard and say, even when I had nothing to do.
Even when I literally had nothing to do, if someone pressed play and put, like, headphones on me, I would just take them. No, I really, I don't.
Yeah. You're not a consumer of, you know, the dealer shouldn't consume his own.
Yeah.
You know, that's an old saying.
It would be called podcasturbating if you did. Listen to the podcast.
God, we've got to clean up this Nora Jones podcast.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd be saying that.
I love it.
God,
I wish I could take credit. Sarah came up with that when she was listening.
It's really
I mean, I don't have any problem.
You know, you mentioned earlier, like, well, I wouldn't have never have a chance to have a meal with you. I'd be delighted to anytime if you're going to be in town and you need someone to grab, you know, breakfast, whatever, I will...
You'll pick it up and bring it to my hotel?
Breakfast.
Breakfast.
Well, you want to put,
we're not quite to dinner yet.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I'm sorry. We can't be forward.
You know. Not even brunch. You're like 9 a.m. Yeah.
No, 9 a.m.
5 a.m. is when I get up when I come to L.A. because I'm from the East Coast. So
yeah.
That's not bad.
I will take you out for a meal between 7 a.m. and 8:30 a.m.
Sold.
Man. Yeah. And we split it. It's got to be an international House of Pancakes.
Yeah.
Can I come?
No, seriously, anytime. I would just be delighted.
I would be ecstatic. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes. We brought it full circle. You are a podcaster. And I a pod masturbator.
Podcaster.
I think Nora Jones is an honorary child.
I just said pod masturbator.
Yeah. You really just went for it.
Yeah. I think what I'm talking about is different than what you're talking about. Well, it's been another filthy show with Nora Jones. Nora, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That was amazing.
Great to see you all.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We haven't done voicemails in a while.
Okay. You know, I'm always a little on edge because I feel I'll be criticized.
You always say that, and then I never give you any that are critical.
So you're saying there are ones that are
critical?
I'm
not saying that.
You just did.
I'm saying I never give you any that are critical. I was going to maybe go on to say there are no critical ones.
I don't think you were, but it's okay. There's got to be. But this is America where 50% of people hate the other 50%. They can't all agree
on
Conan
O'Brien. This is a voluntary thing where people call in and they're already fans of yours. This is not going to be the place where you, there's craziness in there for sure. But
good. Well, that's how you know they're my people.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's I'm ready. I've prepared myself.
Okay. Eduardo, punch it.
Hey, Conan. This is State Senator Kathy Breen. I'm calling from Maine, and I'm calling to see if you are familiar with the retired presidential yacht, which is called the USS Sequoia. Given that you are such a history buff, I wanted you to know that the ship is being restored here in Maine at a shipyard in Belfast, and I wanted to invite you to come and see the ship sometime during its restoration, which will be over the next few years. It's an amazing vessel, literally, of American history that will just blow your mind when you realize all the many events and historic figures who spent time on the yacht. It was in service from the time of President Wilson until President Carter. And it's really just an amazing gem of U.S. history. And it's here in Maine for a few years getting restored. So I wanted to invite you to that and find out if you're familiar with it and see if you might want to come to Maine and see it.
Wow. That was State Senator Kathy Breen. I am aware of the Sequoia.
I didn't know about this.
Well, I could be wrong, but I think this was the presidential yacht that is featured in the movie Nixon. Mm. Remember the movie Nixon that was made by Oliver Stone?
With Anthony Hopkins?
With Anthony Hopkins as Nixon. Nixon used to love to, I think, get in the Sequoia, if I'm thinking of the right ship, and he used to like to sail up the Potomac. That was like his idea of fun, which actually does sound fun, but he'd bring like Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Kissinger, which sounds less fun. And they would sit around and go like, I think we're going to get away with it. You're going to get away with it, sir. Yeah, boss, you're going to get away with it. I really do. Let's take it up to 20 knots. What do you say, guys? And so I think it was that kind of deal on the Sequoia, but it's portrayed in Oliver Stone's movie. They're all on the Sequoia. And I have to say, I've enjoyed some of Oliver Stone's work, but sometimes he has a heavy touch.
I'll say.
And so there's one scene in here which really was like, oh, that's too much, where Anthony Hopkins as Nixon is on the Sequoia. They're saying, you know, Mr. President, what should we do about Cambodia? And he's like, bomb them all. And then someone says, oh, but Mr. President, there could be loss of life. I don't care. Bomb. And then just then the chef says, Mr. President, your steak. And he puts a steak in front of him. And Nixon just then goes to cut into the steak and it's all red and juicy. And he goes, blood, too much blood.
Dracula.
And I'm like, oh my God. Well, he then did turn into a bat and flutter away. But you know what I mean? I was like, come on, Oliver Stone. I don't care. Bomb them all. Here's some steak. Blood. I can't. I must go back to my ancestral Transylvania. But I believe that is a moment in film that depicts the president on the Sequoia.
Well, we should get you on that yacht and you can recreate that scene with some steak.
I will. But you know what? We have to act quickly because the Sequoia is being restored, according to State Senator Kathy Breen, over a 4-year period. We've got no time to waste. I would like to see it though.
Yeah,
sure.
I would too.
You like that stuff.
Oh, I love
any piece of any sort of history. This is a plate that, you know, Reagan used. You're like, what? A plate? Oh my God.
Wait a minute.
Can I hold it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a plate.
Especially
That's
that
cool.
era, late Cold War era.
Yes, I'm with you. I find that when someone, well, you
pure
famously.
Arousal.
Yeah. I mean, you have Eisenhower's phone. We talked about this once and you brought it in. And I thought that was cool. And I think I'm fascinated by that stuff. So yeah. I would love to take a quick tour of the Sequoia. And I think it was a very nice invitation.
Yeah.
And
because Sona, did you ever have to do like duck and cover drills in school for nuclear war? Or was
not
it just
for nuclear war, but for earthquakes. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's, I think, something that shapes a child, that when you have that existential fear of dying from the Cold War, that at no warning. You know?
Today at my kid's school, they do the same thing, duck and cover, but it's for a nut allergy.
Oh God, I can't even.
Come on, that was a solid joke.
I know, was it?
That's how things have changed.
Was it a little cheesy?
Oh, but I mean, come on.
Hey, I don't know. I was for a nut allergy.
Come on, we're a family. We're having fun.
Hey, it's time to duck and cover. Someone used the wrong pronoun. I'm just saying, times have changed. Times have changed. Anyway, welcome to our Joe Rogan moment.
I know.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I know.
I would check it out.
I'll check out his ship.
Well, first of all,
check out a mic.
Yeah, you just lay down. The mic is 7 feet from you.
I'll check out a ship.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're not invited. She didn't say Sona. She said Conan.
And by implication, Matt.
She called the podcast. She called the podcast.
You know what? You're right. And I don't often admit I'm wrong, but you're right.
You never admit you're wrong.
I just did.
I know.
The gummy just hit.
Yeah.
Look at this one.
What is with you?
I don't know.
It's one thing that you're reclining, but your hand is on your belly.
I know, because I don't know. Okay.
But also, can I say, no, stay there, Sona. This is nice. I like the way you are right now.
I'm very comfortable right now.
You know what I love? How entitled are you that you're in that position and you had your hand on your belly and you went, I'd check out the presidential yacht.
No.
That's a lot of entitlement. That is your generation.
You millennials.
How dare you?
You millennials. Yeah.
What is your deal with nut allergies and pronouns in my generation, bruh? I think that's why I'm like this right now. You're aging yourself and I'm getting younger.
And more Jamaican.
I'm repping the millennials. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. No, I...
the mills.
You grew up in a very different world where, okay, you had an earthquake drill, but we grew up under a constant existential threat of nuclear war. And that shaped Gourley and I and made us the cold warriors we are today.
I'm a walking ball of anxiety because of that.
That's not true.
It's true. It's totally true.
You know what? Every generation has their own existential fears.
Yes.
Every generation. No one gets out scot-free. We all are as we always will be and always have been. Okay. I'm a wise man who can see things that others can't see.
You belong on a presidential yacht.
I do. I've got to get on
the Sequoia. I'll check out a yacht.
Of course you will. Well, anyway, it's a very kind invitation. Kathy, and I will try to make this happen because I would love to see the Sequoia. And I hope I'm right about my my Nixon reference. I believe that's the ship that he used to take up. And his favorite thing to do was sail up to Mount Vernon. This is what I recall from, I read this somewhere. I think he used to like to sail up to Mount Vernon, Washington's home. And I think by this point, they were all loaded. They were drinking the whole way. And when they got to Mount Vernon, they would fire off a military salute, probably taking the chimney off of Mount Vernon and then turn around and come back. So those are good times. I wish I had a yacht with a cannon on it. That's what I wish I had.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned this? I was driving through Missouri. I was in a car. I was by myself and I pulled into, my car was overheating. So I pulled into the Truman Presidential Library parking lot and my radiator overheated and green goo went all over their parking lot. And a docent from the Truman Library came out and started yelling at me, and I put my car back into drive and grinding cylinders the whole way, tore out of there.
Straight to the Eisenhower Library.
Yeah, leaving a bunch of muck behind, steaming muck behind me and a furious docent. So my apologies to the Truman Presidential Library.
Sona, what's your presidential library story?
I have a car story.
I mean, you were in a Lincoln?
Oh!
Huh? I know. I've been to the Reagan Library. I went to the Carter Library with you.
Yep.
I met President Carter.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
Which was really nice. Yeah.
I introduced you to not just the president, but the first lady, Rosalind Carter, was there
as well.
I started
crying.
You did start crying.
Yeah. And then when we took a photo, he said I could stand next to him in the photo, which was really nice. And yeah.
It's a great photo. It's the four of us.
It's a wonderful photo. Yeah.
I'm jealous.
It was a really nice thing. I mean, they like were talking and then his assistants were like, you know, you can go in there if you want after they're done meeting. And I was like, I can.
Yeah.
I was like, me?
Yeah.
It was really
And sad. You know what Carter didn't have? A nut allergy. Peace out. Mic drop.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.